those houses. They were in those houses with no car, no food in the fridge. It was basically, you're going to go to work and you're going to come home. And I'm going to come pick you up and take you to go shopping to get clothes. And if you don't want to go, then you're going to get beat. And you're going to work all night and you're going to get that whack from me. And when you don't, you come home and you're going to get beat. That was the purpose of moving those girls into those houses. That is what Ocean Fleming was found guilty of. That is what Ocean Fleming should remain guilty of. This court does not need to address the constitutionality of some innocent roommate that we actually, I don't even know the identity of Jessica Brudizzi's roommate. No idea. We don't have to. Ocean Fleming is clearly in violation of the law. Clearly. There's no overbreath applied to him. There's no vagueness applied to him. He knew it, and he was violating it. Additionally, the history and the purpose of the statute. Well, first of all, as you state yourself in the Ford decision, if you still don't go there, that the omission itself does not mean that there's no strict liability. You are still to look at the statute as a whole. Yes, strict liability is omitted from subsection E. I grant that. It was poorly written. It was written in 1911. And what do we know that happened around 1911? The year before Congress passed the Mann Act. The purpose of the Mann Act was to stem the outrageous acts of people enslaving women into prostitution. That was the purpose of this statute. So yes, there is a specific intent purpose in the statute. It's in the history. It's in the remaining language. Again, the language itself supports that specific intent requirement, as you said yourselves before. And courts take great care to not dispense of any statute or dispose of some type of mens rea if in doing so you're going to criminalize a wide range of conduct, which is exactly what they're doing. The state has no intention, because we know what the statute is for. No intention of charging an innocent roommate, an innocent parent, somebody who's not putting somebody in that position to be a prostitute. Ocean Fleming is guilty of these counts. He had that specific intent. The jury was even instructed, even though the statute doesn't require specific intent, and those conditions should remain. Even if this court were to find otherwise with regard to the statute, do what you did in Ford. Say, from here on out, there is a specific intent requirement. Mr. Fleming does not get the benefit of that because he's clearly in violation of it. He is engaging in conduct that is clearly prescribed, and he can't complain about the vagueness when it applies to others. He just can't do that, and that's from Sheriff of Washoe County versus Martin. Now, moving on to Detective Boffman, we've heard the argument that his testimony was highly inflammatory. Under Hallmark v. Eldridge, the qualification of an expert is subject to abuse of discretion. First and foremost, Judge Milani never said in front of a jury, I declare Christopher Boffman an expert. The jury never heard the word expert with regard to Christopher Boffman.
He testified beyond his personal knowledge to give information on this culture.
I absolutely disagree. NRS 50.275 says that if scientific, technical, or other specialized knowledge will assist the trier of fact to understand the evidence, then a witness qualified by that special knowledge, skill, expertise, training, or education may testify to matters within the scope of such knowledge. Yet, no, he testified to things he knew about. It's, unfortunately, there is no advanced degree in prostitute subculture. I'm sure with the media coverage that we're seeing today and the media coverage nationwide that we're getting, we may start to see that. But there is no...
Other than the translation of terms, though, what utility, how did his testimony advance the juror's knowledge on an issue that's relevant?
It is a... The pimp prostitute world is... It's unreal. It is surreal to the eyes of the normal person who is not in the system. who is not exposed to this every day, to the dental hygienist, the camera operator, the person running a doctor's office that brought into jury service, has no idea what things mean, what things are, what that realm is.
Right, and I appreciate on the vernacular.
But it goes beyond the vernacular. It goes to the state of mind of these women. And unfortunately, without being able to climb inside their heads and root around to know why is it that Brittany Steiner had to be brought in custody and then invoked Fifth Amendment privilege that doesn't even apply to her because all the offenses for prostitution occurred over a year ago, and then to lie about the nature of her relationship with him, why is it that April Millard would just go with him to the next house after she'd been dragged out of the car and beaten severely and then not tell the police what had just happened to her when she's shoved out of the house to get the police out of the way? Why she lied to the police and lied to her own mother to say, I was high on drugs, I didn't know what was going on, but I had an altercation with Ocean's brother, I don't know anything about Ocean.
So the expert testimony is offered sort of a on a Perez-type model.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is to prove the state, not to prove, but to let the jury draw its own inference. Because I think it would be impermissible for Christopher Baughman to stand up there and say, no, Brittany Steiner did it exactly because of X, Y, Z. April Millard lied exactly because of X, Y, Z. I think that would be improper. I think that would be improper vouching on the part of Detective Baughman. So what we do is Detective Baughman is allowed to testify to things he's known, things he's seen, things that happen in the pimp prostitution world that the rest of us know nothing about.
But it's relative, particular to the fact that they didn't willingly testify anymore.
Absolutely. Because what happens to girls who testify against their pimps is very highly relevant when you've got Brittany Steiner in custody lying her little pretty face off to members of a jury, when you've got Facebook accounts of Ocean talking about how he's going to knock a bitch and he wants Natalie to come back to him and it helps explain why we don't have Natalie, which is highly relevant. This was incredibly relevant to have the jury know why it is that it's one thing to just say, there's a rule, girls aren't supposed to talk. Okay, but why? What happens if they talk? Particularly with Brittany, what happened when she left?
But wasn't there other testimony as to physical reprisal and other aspects of punishments that might occur if they talked? There were other people that testified.
Actually, Jessica did not testify as to what happened to her when she talked, because Ocean never knew she talked. Ocean's all over the jail phone calls not knowing that she talked. April had said that, you know, she knew she'd get beat if she talked. She knew that. However, it's that everybody had their own motives. Brittany chose to be taken into custody and risk perjury. And it looks like my time is up.
You may finish your thought.
Okay. Brittany had to be taken into custody and face perjury. April lied to the police flat out, lied to her own mother, until taken into custody by another detective before she finally came forward and said, that's enough. Jessica willingly came forward. It's not a one-size-fits-all. And so, yes, it was important for Christopher Baughman to testify that these are things that happen, that every single
thing under Perez that testimony comes in.
It does. It absolutely
does. I'm not sure Perez is, I mean, we had a split on it, but I think I'm understanding what you're saying is Perez is on all fours and that's the end of the hunt.
Exactly. Perez stands for that premise. And if I could just also note that none of the statements by Mr. Baughman were objected to at all. In fact, they were capitalized on by Mr. Draskovich by showing him his own research of the literature to say that things weren't possibly as bad as Mr. Baughman was making them out to be. So with that,
thank you very much. You have 3.5 minutes left.
Thank you.
I'd
I'd first like to go back to the Detective Bauman discussion that was of the state. Detective Bauman exceeded the scope of what was permissible. The state is talking about we needed to explain the state of mind of these victims. But what Detective Bauman did when he said things like, I was in a gang unit, and by far, pimp on prostitute violence is far more dangerous than gang violence. And when he created this us versus them dichotomy, when he said prostitution is something that is plagued by the Las Vegas community, I mean, these are things that U.S. v. York specifically talked about. And then the other problem with Detective Bauman's testimony is that at some point he starts interpreting Facebook messages, emails. There were no code words in a lot of those messages. There were no code words in a lot of those pictures. And the court just...
What do you say to her comment that was not objected to?
I do have to concede that it wasn't objected to. However, I would ask the court to review it under plain error.
Why, if we review that under plain error, is it not harmless?
It's not harmless because it infected the entire trial. Because what the state essentially did is they took all the stuff that had been admitted by previous witnesses and essentially put it up on an Elmo or a detective from
them. Presenting it, yeah.
And then now he's speculating as to the state of mind of these women, who, by the way, the state just agreed, all are on a case-by-case basis. Everyone has different motives, all different kinds of states of mind. His testimony is entirely speculative. He starts to read these letters and say, well, I think this is what they're saying. That's invading the province of the jury, of the fact finder, which is something that York is very concerned about, and is exactly what happened here. So it infested the entire trial because essentially you had evidence that admitted in previous stages of the trial all brought back so that Detective Bauman can analyze it. Grooming is something that's very different from pimp culture and prostitution culture. These are some things that we can grasp. Grooming involves kind of the acceleration of a pedophile's behavior. And we can understand pimp prostitution culture. There's an abuse that's going to happen if you allow this expert testimony. We can't underestimate the juries. They can make these inferences themselves. If they say, hey, April Miller didn't show up because she was afraid of being beaten by her pimp, the jury's going to understand that. You don't need an expert to say, sometimes they're taken, knocked away, beaten, raped, starved. That's where the prejudice happens. And that's where the scope of Detective Bauman's testimony was just completely expansive and improper.
We're almost out of time, but I have a question, and I'll give you time to answer it.
Sure.
The state makes the argument that under the instructions as given, the broader constitutional challenge you're making really doesn't lie in this case because, in effect, the statute was narrowed so precisely. Could you respond to why we should not accept that and go on by this?
I do think the state is conflating the overbreadth doctrine with the vagueness doctrine.
Okay.
Because in vagueness, you do have an as-applied challenge. With the overbreadth doctrine, even if you find that Ocean Fleming did intend to have those prostitutes continue to be prostitutes, I mean, there's a lot of evidence that he had a family relationship with Brittany, that he had a kid with her, that they were in a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. He still has that fundamental right of association. If he's not forcing her to be a prostitute, if he's just a passive person who's allowing the conduct to happen, he has a right to live with the mother of his children. And the court cannot take that right away from him because it's protected under the First Amendment.
As a follow-up to that question, may I?
Yes, of course.
As a follow-up, with an overbreadth challenge, one of the aspects, specifically under Broderick, is it must not be capable of a limiting instruction. It sounds to me like this instruction was limiting in that regard to that particular language.
And that's why I distinguish four, because I think when you put a limit, you limit the construction of the statute in four, you make the conduct criminal, right? So that the speech...
You still have the purpose.
Right.
Beyond specific intent.
Right, yeah. Right. You have a purpose that person remain a prostitute. Here it's completely passive. And here you still have that right to live with her, unfortunately, even if she is a prostitute.
Well, and the rest of that statute, or the rest of, for you to succeed, the rest of that analysis is that a substantial number of the statute's applications must be unconstitutional, judged in relation to the statute's plain legitimate sweep.
I don't think so. If you read other sections of the statute, the thirds are very similar to Ford. You have inveigles and extent. You have those active verbs that you found in Ford. But if you parcel out the sections, which is what the state does, when they put the charge in the amendment, in the indictment, it literally says you're being charged with living a prostitute. It doesn't even include any other language from the statute. But I think the difference is, if you look at the statute as a whole, there are active words in the other subsections. But when you look at subsection E, the verb is very passive. And that's why I think there's an infirmity, because the state's going to take advantage of that. They're going to strip the live with and a prostitute and felon, and that's all they're going to plead. And that's exactly what they did in this case.
And then the added language in the actual jury instruction, does it then become controlled by another subsection of the statute? I didn't push that analysis all the way through it. But when they limited it as they did, does that then make it
fine? No, they're still operating under the limit of the prostitute. Just that thing. They don't talk about anything about accepting the earnings or forcing her to be a house of prostitution. The jury instruction literally says the defendant must know that she's a prostitute and that he must intend that she continue to be a prostitute. So it doesn't have the verbs of the other statutes.
So it's still purely associational, is your point?
Right.
Okay. Fair enough. Justice Soto, do you have any questions?
I do not.
Nope.
Thank you very much. I want to thank counsel, both of you, for your excellent briefs and oral arguments, and this matter will stand submitted.